Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, another special edition of the Terrible Podcast. Pittsburgh Steelers Training Camp 2016. It's August the 14th, 6:45 Eastern Time. The Steelers fresh off of their preseason loss Friday night to the Detroit Lions. We're hoping to get back on the practice field today at St. Vincent College. Unfortunately, Mother Nature did not cooperate. They had to move the session inside to the basketball gym. Seemed to be a little bit shorter session on Sunday. Obviously, they weren't in pads. They didn't have contact. So that leaves us with a very soggy Alex Cazorra, who attempted to go out to Latrobe today. He is now back, and in lieu of talking about what didn't happen in front of his eyes on Sunday, we're going to discuss what did happen in the Steelers' loss at Heinz Field Friday night. Alex, you take the blow dryer to yourself and I'll blow dry it off now?
I'm just happy to have a roof under me right now, Dave. Man, it's I know I haven't been there for as long as some of those guys like Ed Bouchette. I've only really been going every day for, 3 years now? But it's never rained like that, Dave. It just poured for, I told you before the podcast, for probably at least 45 minutes straight. And there was some thunder and lightning, and there was just no way you could go out there and practice today on that field.
And today is your 3-year anniversary of Steelers Depot. Is that correct?
It's like rain on your wedding day. Yeah. It's, but yeah, 3 years, and it's I was looking forward to a great day. But hey, it's still a great day. We still got football, still a lot to talk about.
Yeah, happy anniversary, brother. I think the first one is like paper. What's the third one? A chicken McNugget?
Yeah, something old, something borrowed, something blue. Yep, I gotcha.
Yeah, where's the time gone, Alex? Seems like yesterday you started with us and all, and glad to have you. You're doing an awesome job. Let's get to it. What we observed Friday night. I know I've had a chance to go through the tape 3 times already. I bet you're right there with me. And, you know, they obviously lost the game. Obviously, they did not have a lot of output on offense except for, a few good runs by Darrell Richardson, the running back. I thought for the most part, and I broke down all of Landry Jones' throws that he had in that game. And from the accuracy standpoint, I thought he was fine. I thought there were a few throws maybe that he shouldn't have made, a couple that probably should have been caught. So let's start there. What was your thoughts on the quarterbacks overall?
Yeah, I didn't think Landry had a bad game. I mean, he had maybe the best throw, maybe the second best throw anyone made in that game was that throw to DHB that was dropped. It was right over the defender, and it was a third down play, and it was a chance to move the sticks, and, the receiver just didn't do his job. But, I thought Jones was put in difficult spots. You talk about lack of a run game, generally speaking, putting some third and long, some penalties that negated things, some drops, those kind of type things. So, that's tough for any quarterback to deal with, especially one, in the first preseason game where you're still trying to work things out. I thought that his decision-making, though, overall was sound. There was one bad read that I thought he made. It was that little crawler out to Jesse James with a linebacker over him. Shouldn't have made that throw. Should have hit the flat receiver who was open there for potential gainer. But other than that, I know some people were kind of negative on Landry Jones' performance. And, if you look at the total yards and did you move the offense, it doesn't look pretty. But if you look beyond the box score and some of the context, I think it was better.
And that's exactly why I wanted to make that a priority coming out on this Sunday. Obviously, it didn't take me long to go through those, 13, 14 throws of his. He had a couple that were erased by penalties. Overthrew DHB on one of them down the side there. That was a pass interference on Cresden Butler. There was another one that was completed to Eli Rogers, right, that legal hands to the face on Alejandro Villanueva that got called back as well too. That pass to the end zone for the touchdown to DHB, that might have been Landry's best deep pass that we've seen, right?
It was great, yeah. It's a wonder what happens when the offensive line just gives you a clean pocket for a moment to throw from. And, yeah, that was right there. It was a great catch by Hayward May. Got to give him credit as well. But that's where it needed to be. And yeah, so I thought Jones, you know, the confidence, you didn't see delay games. You didn't see, you know, miscommunication. Guys were kind of in the right spot. I think Jones probably audibled or checked out of some plays once or twice. So I thought all those intangible things, you know, things that you would expect from a guy like Lindsey Jones, who's been in the league a couple seasons, has played some Sunday football. He's beyond all that. You can check all those boxes. So that's a good, solid step forward for Lindsey Jones.
And it'll be interesting to see if he's able to pick up from there and carry that into the game against the Eagles as well. Bruce Gronkowski, there really isn't a lot to talk about with him. He ran on a couple of the snaps that he had, and on the second one, he heard something pop in possibly the hamstring. He quickly removed himself from the game, so not a lot to talk about there. Poor Dustin Vaughn, you got to hate it for when the third or fourth quarterback gets into the game, you know, because of the offensive line that he's dealing with. You know, the book on Dustin Vaughn coming in to this year was accuracy. And to me, I mean, I thought he avoided the rush nicely a couple of times. But those throws of his, and now we don't know if, you know, how much is on a receiver, but it looked like, you know, the accuracy had some issues.
Sure, it did, yeah, but I bet you it's just tired legs all around, lines tired, receivers are tired, you know, going through their first game for many of these guys. So like you said, it's not an ideal situation to be in. I kind of like, though, the fact, you know, that Vaughn had to come into the game unexpected to kind of really throw you into the fire and just see how you respond to it. I thought his pocket presence wasn't bad. He was stepping up into the pocket and being able to climb and had a decent feel for the rush. He showed some touch, though. That one pass to Kobe Hamilton that got negated by a penalty, that was a great throw. That was his best of the night. So I think for day one, I think getting in and out of the huddle was pretty solid. There wasn't late snaps, and again, no delay games and things of that nature, you know, that you might associate with younger quarterbacks and guys first year in your system. So, you know, it certainly is not a sparkling day on a day where your team as a whole throws for, what was it, 130 yards passing. But I thought, you know, in a vacuum and understanding that context, there were some positives there.
Yeah, and he'll obviously get some more work, one would think, in the game against the Eagles, especially with, I mean, look, I would be shocked if Bruce Gronkowski doesn't miss the rest of the preseason now. We'll see. He was supposed to, I think, go for an MRI on Saturday. Mike Tomlin had no update on that after Sunday's practice. So we'll see. The thing is, they did not sign another quarterback on Sunday, so one would tend to think that we'll see maybe a little bit of Roethlisberger against the Eagles, and then a lot of Landry Jones and a lot of Dustin Vaughn after that. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I agree. And, yeah, you know, I think that it's tough to sign a quarterback now. So even if Gronkowski's out for a while, it's tough to add somebody and try to teach him this system. And by the time that he has it nailed down, you know, you're at final cuts. So I'm excited to see more Dustin Vaughn, though. I think it's a question of, you know, does he keep that number three spot if Gronkowski's done for the year? Do they sign somebody? You know, that's going to be a real storyline now for this team.
Offensive line. We didn't get to see Marquise Pouncey obviously sat this one out. Cody Wallace started in his place. It was like getting the band back together from the end of last year. Villanueva left tackle, Foster left guard, Wallace center, David DeCastro right guard, Marcus Gilbert right tackle. Villanueva, not the best 10 snaps of Villanueva's career by far. Gave up a sack, had the illegal hands to the face penalty. Believe he noted on Sunday talking to the media that there was another snap he wasn't happy with, had a blown assignment on as well. The rest of the offensive line, though, I mean, for what we saw of them, I thought okay.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that assessment. Right, Villanueva struggled. He was oversetting too much. Guys weren't able to beat him inside, and he was struggling to mirror and get square to them. The first snap of the game, he got caught up in Jesse James, and Villanueva went to the ground. So that was a bad omen to that game, and it didn't get any better for Villanueva. I didn't think Ryan Harris was a whole lot better, though. If you look at Ryan Harris's first two snaps of that game,
the
first
push one, back.
Yeah, he gets blown back on a speed bull rush. Then the next one, the Lions broadcast on NFL Game Pass has a good look at at it, it's he's trying to get to the second level to work to the linebacker and whiffs completely. So not a good start for Ryan Harris. I thought things did level out a little bit more, but I didn't think either left tackle, Villanueva or Harris, played well. I don't know if your assessment for Harris is the same as mine, or what did you think of him?
Yeah, very more negative than positive in my eyes coming away. I mean, he really flat-backed, it looked like, on that second-level lunge, you know, that he whiffed on. So, yeah, not a banner day for those two who are presumably still in a battle for the left tackle spot. I think that's Villanueva's spot, though, regardless moving forward. You would like to see Ryan Harris kind of represent himself better moving forward here. Didn't think we was going to see – I didn't think the chances were good that we were going to see Gerald Hawkins play in that game because of a shoulder injury. But he did, and he played on both sides, and he had some issues, but there were also some bright spots, I thought, more so at right tackle. You agree?
Yeah, right tackles, you know, that's where he started playing at LSU, so I think it's still a little more natural for him. It's where they really played him most of the time here in training camp. Yeah, as a run blocker, I thought he showed some aggressiveness, some nasty ability to drive his lower half and finish some of his blocks and being able to get a good push on his down block. Some of that was, you know, the defensive end spiking inside, but you're going to ride him inside and move him off the ball. So I thought Hawkins finished as a run blocker was good. I thought he used his length to his advantage of being able to seal the arc whenever he did get beat. You could tell he kind of really wore down at the end of that game, and he was kind of slow out of his stance, and yeah, I think conditioning was an issue, and there's that shoulder injury. Tomlin said that he aggravated that shoulder during the game, and so he's going to have to be evaluated, so we don't know what his status is going forward. I thought the biggest thing, the issue in pass protection specifically, was that he wasn't getting enough width on his kick slot. He was getting some depth, but he wasn't getting wide enough, and guys were able to get around him, and he was trying to, now he was forced to open the gate and try to just try to move guys upfield with a push and just try to do anything you can. So I didn't think his initial slide was that clean.
The other guys, Hubbard and Finney, it was like a roller coaster I felt with those two. Now, Finney did have a nice pull to the left along with tight end Xavier Grimble on one of those counters that ended up resulting in nice yardage for Daryl Richardson. We did get to see Hubbard at tackle some, unfortunately, and I don't know. Like I said, I've up and down with those two.
I thought Finney had a good game. I like what he did as a combo blocker, being able to chip at the first level and get a push and then work to the second level. I thought Finney did some good things with that. I liked his physicality. Showed a little more athleticism than what I remember seeing. Getting to the second level, some of his reach blocks. There's, I think, the one vine that I had yesterday on Twitter of that one long run off the right side.
And that's hard to do, to get out there and then get your guy turned back inside.
Yeah, absolutely. To do a reach block without any help and the tackle, you know, shaded to your outside shoulder, very difficult to do. And so that's technique, you know, good footwork, being able to be quick off the ball and getting your hips in position to seal him to the inside. So I thought that might have been Finney's best play. I thought the pull, you know, that play he had on that trap block was good, but, you know, the running back just running away from him. I didn't think the Lions really defended that particularly well. So I thought, yeah, Finney had a really nice game. Hubbard did some decent things at guard at right tackle, though. It was bad, and if you're struggling against the Lions' backups at right tackle, I'd hate to see what happened, you know, in-game.
Anybody else stick out, in, you know, in that group? Unfortunately, Mahalik suffered a knee injury, and he was waived injured on Sunday. He'll clear waivers and go to the IR. So for now, that's over with. Manhart got some time in the game. Oh, trying to think who else. Matt Filer got some time in the game. Anything else stick out with that group?
Yeah, I'm still working through the last little bit of that game, so I haven't evaluated them too cleanly. And, yeah, some of the snaps weren't that plentiful. No one else really stuck out to me in a big way. I'm just bummed about Mahalik. I've kind of talked him up throughout camp. I thought there was something there, and obviously, you know, his leg got bent back. It's an MCL sprain. At least that's what Tomlin's initial diagnosis was. Sprains can become ligament tears, you know, once you actually really go under the hood and find that out. So that's a bummer. Hopefully he can come back for next year, though. I hope they keep him around for at least the rest of this year into camp next year.
Yeah, we'll see. They have 5 days after he clears waivers to do an injury settlement with him. Now, that doesn't guarantee that he'll stay on IR the rest of the year. They could always, once he gets healthy, go ahead and waive him from injured reserve, or they can keep him on that split salary and wait till the season ends and go out, you know, go with him again. So we'll have to see. I was really, you know, you had what happened with Villanueva, and you're wondering if you can catch lightning in the bottle twice with that same kind of converted defensive lineman type, you know, scenario with a big boy at that. So, you know, that's on hold for now. Running backs, Richardson pretty much the star offensively for the Steelers in this game. Several nice runs, one albeit through a hole I think you could have even gone through, Alex. But there was one run that really reminded you of Le'Veon Bell, I thought. That patience, that plodding, kind of waiting, picking and choosing. What did he get, 6, 7, 8 yards on that that run? And then the run to the outside on that one that you referenced with the reach block by Finney was good. Caught the ball out of the backfield a few times as well, too, for a total of 16 yards. Really nothing not to like. Now, go back and look at that one sack, Alex. Do you know which one I'm talking about? Should he have got that late linebacker?
No, I don't know which one you're referring to, unfortunately. I'll have to go back and look at
it. All right. I've already sent you that GIFs waiting for you. You know, the linebacker kind of came a little bit late there. The linemen were tied up. I kind of wondered, and he, you know, he ran right by. I think it was Richardson that was in on that play. So have a look at that. I'm sure that'll be in your sack breakdown that you'll have for the folks here in the coming in the coming days as well too. Now, Richardson had a good day. That's not to say that Toussaint had a bad game. I mean, he only had 2 carries in the game for 8 yards. But I mean, he's definitely staking a claim to, hey, you know, I deserve to be in this battle.
The first thing I noticed with him, kind of looking back after the game, was just the snaps that he had. I mean, Cameron Stingley and Brandon Brown Dukes had 1 carry apiece, and they probably played, I don't know, 15 total snaps, maybe at the very, you know, back end of the fourth quarter. It was Richardson first guy in. He was the hot hand, and they rode him for basically the second and third quarters. And yeah, you're right. He was kind of the star on a very lackluster day for this offense. He showed that burst and speed that we saw in camp and I've talked about. He showed that, and it translated to the football field. So that was impressive. And originally, whenever I kind of first was reflecting on that day, the game, Dave, in the video that I did, I thought that he didn't really get more than what was blocked. But when I went back and watched it a couple times, that first run out of the end zone when the Steelers got backed up on their own 2, someone from the Lions, I don't know if it was a linebacker or a blitzing DB, shot in free, and Richardson sidestepped him and got upfield for a positive gain. So could have been a safety. He turned it into a couple-yard gain. There was another longer run to the left side, I think, later in the game, where he made a DB miss in the open field, cut and got upfield. So I thought Richardson played fast, played smart, played aggressive, got upfield, didn't dance, you know, ran hard and finished his run. So I think overall a very strong day for Darrell Richardson, and he's definitely not cemented, but definitely put himself atop of Stingley and Brandon Brown Dukes.
And that one that you referenced down the side there, I remember typing that on Twitter. Nice little juke he has to him there.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of quickness to him. So, yeah, he's not going to be a guy that's going to make everybody miss. You know, the one long run, I think the first one of the game he had off the left sideline earlier in the game, the safety caught him by the ankles. You know, that's a good game that could have been a great one. So he's not the most powerful guy and not the most elusive, but he's going to run, you know, with conviction. He's going to run downhill. He's going to get positive yards. So, yeah, I thought it was a really nice day from Darrell Richardson.
Yeah, Toussaint, really 2 carries, not a lot of playing time to discuss there, so we won't.
On punt coverage, though, I think he had 2 tackles, so that's a good feather in his cap.
Who's that?
Toussaint.
Oh, yeah, he did. He yeah. was in on some stops, and he and Richardson both got a shot at returning kickoffs, too, one each. I think Toussaint had one for 23, and Richardson, I think, had one for like 25, 26, something like that as well. So, you know, if you're going to be that third running back, hopefully you can make some sort of contribution on special teams, and it's good that a guy like Toussaint, you know, little things like that can end up being the difference makers, you know, in making rosters. All right, let's go to wide receivers, and let's go to one Sammy Coates.
Yeah, not what we saw in training camp, and I always hate it whenever those guys don't do well because you feel like you talked them up in camp, and everyone's saying, "What the heck, Alex? What did you see out there?" But that was a totally different version of Sammy Coates than we saw in training camp, and he was just stacking bad plays. It was just, drops and double catches and fumbles and, a lack of effort and execution as a run blocker. You could just see that his confidence was shot out there that game. And although I thought he said all the positive things and had the right attitude after the game, talking about how it's unacceptable, you can't let it happen again. He didn't make any excuses, even though he had many opportunities to do so. I like that mentality, and I'm not going to crush a guy after one bad game. We're in one game of the preseason here. This isn't week one against Washington, but definitely not a game that's going to inspire confidence in Steelers fans who have not watched him in training camp.
Do you think he was hearing footsteps on that pass towards the middle with that linebacker that, it's hard. Yeah, the throw might have been a little bit low from Landry Jones, but it's still a ball Sammy Coates has to catch, and why he kind of went down like he did. You think he heard footsteps there or no?
Is that the one that went through his hands where he was sliding over the middle?
Yes.
It's hard to tell. The stupid ref got in the way, like right at the wrong moment, whenever you wanted to see exactly if that ball went through his hands or a little in front. I don't have a problem with sliding, I guess, if you're just trying to avoid that shot and try to haul the pass in. But I think that was a play that Coach should have made. It's hard to tell for sure based off of the angles that we have, but it looked like a catch that he should have had.
Maybe his head coming around a little bit late on that as well, too. Go back and look at that again and tell me what you think. A guy that the Steelers signed just a few days before the game, Kobe Hamilton. I thought, targeted five times, only had two catches, but I thought that the catches that he had were clutch-like.
Yeah, and the one that he had got called back. It was that nice throw from Vaughn. It was a nice contested grab by Hamilton. I guess whenever you're the second leading receiver with two catches or 22 yards, this is faint praise for a guy in this situation. But yeah, he made the most of his snaps, and that's a thing that a guy that's trying to, is at the back end of that pecking order has to do. So I thought, yeah, he made a couple plays that makes you want to see some more and to get you some more reps. So that's important. I thought Marcus Tucker did a good job on special teams. He had one tackle on a punt, and he was down there for a couple others. He got work as a gunner and a jammer, so he was kind of wearing multiple hats. Didn't do much on offense, I don't think. Eli Rogers, I know he didn't have the great day statistically. The one play was called back, but I just thought he had a good sense of, getting open and finding grass, whether that was man zone rules and running away from zone coverage or, reading the leverage of the defensive back. And the one catch that he had, it was a little, almost an angle route, and the DB set him up outside. He had outside leverage, so Rodgers just cut across his face and ran inside. So I thought Rodgers, from an IQ standpoint and finding grass and making yourself open, I thought he had a really strong day.
Only 16 snaps. I was disappointed in that.
Well, maybe they're just that confident in it. Maybe they don't feel like they have to see a whole lot more. He did his thing. He did it well, and they got him out of there.
And he only had one special team snap, too, right?
I thought he had two cracks with punt returns, but I don't know if he covered anything.
He's definitely going to get more time moving forward. Darius Heyward-Bey had that early drop. Could you tell that underneath player got a finger on that ball?
I really didn't think he did. I mean, he obstructed Hayward Bay's vision, so maybe that caused the drop, but I didn't think he touched it.
I didn't think so either, but, the angle, the top of the screen's kind of cut off right there when you go back and watch that again. He did, of course, have the three targets was that one, the one down the right sideline that Landry Jones kind of underthrew to the right side of DHB, and then of course the touchdown grab, which that wasn't going to be a hands catch either way. It went right through his hands and into his chest. So props for him to catching that and getting both feet down in the back of the end zone there.
I actually wanted to ask you: do you make anything that DeMarcus Harris was the third punt returner in that it went Rodgers and then Levi Norwood got a crack ahead of DeMarcus Harris? Do you make anything of that?
No, I've tried to judge my 53-man roster in the past by how people have rolled into the game on special teams, and found out that I read too much into that at times. So,
fair enough.
I just try to judge for kind of when they get out there most of the time now. Levi Norwood, Tucker, didn't Tucker have a drop on one or?
I think so, and that's been the issue with him during campus drops. But I thought from a special teams perspective, which is, of course, his best chance to make noise, I thought he did some nice things.
And let's see, Norwood had two targets, both of them incomplete. One of those times, the guy was all over his back. I'm surprised that wasn't called pass interference there. Anything else stick out wide receiver-wise?
I think that's about it. I thought DeMarcus Ayers had good effort as a run blocker, even though obviously that's not going to be his strong suit. I thought Sammy Coates' effort and execution was below the line to take the Tomlin term, and I think he was just stacking bad plays and wasn't able to shake the mistakes that he made.
Tight end, Jesse James played a lot of snaps in this game, and although didn't set the stat sheet on fire with one catch for 4 yards, I thought he did some good stuff without the football in his hands.
He did a great job as a run blocker. He was aggressive. He was finishing his blocks. He was being able to move people and execute. So, yeah, I thought, you know, obviously on a day where your passing offense has nothing to it, no juice at all you can really do is show what you have as a run blocker. You know, some people were making too much out of the fact that James played so much. He's a second-year guy. Second-year guys have to play a lot of football. We got to find out who you are. And it wasn't even the fact that the depth wasn't great. They had the bodies to do it. They had Paul Lang and Cooper and David Johnson and Grimble, so it's not like they didn't have the bodies, but you have to find out what you have in Jesse James. And the other element is, too, is let's assume that Ladarius Green misses week one. Not even talking retirement or any of that big stuff. Let's just assume that he's out week one. Jesse James has to play a game where he sees a lot of snaps, because week one, you're playing 60 to 70 snaps, you know? So you bet you can't go 10 snaps, you know, 15 snaps in the preseason and then jump to 70. You got to give a guy 40 or so reps so he has that conditioning under him, and so you can gauge where he's at so you can manage him in the games that matter. So people were making a big deal about the snaps he was playing. That was necessary in basically, you know, multiple ways.
It's not like we didn't know it was coming. Mike Tomlin told us it was.
Right, yeah, he was, you know, you got to find out what he is. He's a second-year guy. Ross Cockrell played a ton. He's a second-year guy. You got to get those guys play time, and I don't know why people are making a big deal out of it.
It's the old we don't want to lose them to injury mentality.
I know, but you got to play. The only way to not get hurt in this league is to not play, and I want Jesse James to play.
Xavier Grimble, nothing on the stat sheet, but some decent stuff. I mean, I already referenced the counter block that he had going across the formation there. Didn't play a ton of snaps, though, did he? And kind of an incomplete grade, if you will.
What was the final snap count on him? I didn't see the number. Do you have it by chance? It wasn't much.
It was
less than I thought.
I want to say it was 15, 13 20? Or 18. Hold on just a minute here, and I'll tell you it was 16.
Man, that's lower than I thought it'd be. So I know David Johnson got the nod over Grimble, and that's kind of expected, but you know, I thought Grimble would get more snaps. I thought he had some physicality, line of scrimmage. That trap block that he had, yeah, I guess you'd put that as a positive play for Grimble, but that Lions defender, he didn't even try. He just, you know, he went outside, and Grimble just rode him outside. There was, like, no attempt at all to try to make a play on that, so I barely give Grimble much praise for that play. It was super easy to make. But, yeah, you know, not much as a passing game, so it's not really going to be tailored to Grimble. But I thought he held his own at the line of scrimmage and kind of being a physical presence and using his size. But like you said, incomplete. It's really hard to kind of gauge where he's at.
I was hoping he'd get some more burn in that game.
Do you think it's a conditioning thing? Remember, he had those problems early in camp.
Well, you know, you don't dress them unless you think they can go, right?
Well, I mean, you know, not everyone's going to be in perfect condition, but I think that's a sign that they didn't think he could give him 40 good snaps, and you have to really limit him just to make sure he can go through the game.
I should note that he got 14 snaps on special teams.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's man, where did he play? He played some kick coverage late. Where else did they use him? Field goals. He got used on some field goals, so those are barely special team snaps. Where else did he? Did you see him anywhere else?
I haven't. And without the all 22, you know how tough that is.
Yeah. Right.
Trying to track.
I think he
guys.
Was. I think he was on. Didn't he have a punt coverage tackle? I think he had one. So he got used in a lot of different ways, which is good. That's a good sign for him.
Let's see. Paul Lang got a couple hands, got 14 snaps in that game, 11 on special teams as well, too. I mean, he's obviously not in play for a roster spot right now. Rosie Nix opening kickoff, cracking skulls.
Him and Jesse James. I don't know if you saw James in that clip too. If you didn't, watch the middle of the field basically at the same time. It's like synchronized swimming. They should get a gold medal for that. They knocked out both their guys. Yeah, I love Roosevelt Nix and plays like that. That's what makes Roosevelt Nix Roosevelt Nix.
He only had 3 offensive snaps in that game, 8 special team snaps on top of it. Is that enough for the offense?
Yeah, it was not a pretty game, so it's hard to really judge him.
All right, defense, defensive line. Boy, Javon Hargrave is a real deal.
Yeah, I mean, it was more of the same. It's what we saw at training camp, and, you know, we'll have to see it again against maybe some better competition. The Lions, offensive line is not great, but I did the breakdown because I was super excited to get to watch this guy, and, I mean, it's very difficult to find negatives. He was holding the point of attack against Iran. He was being able to shed. As a pass rusher, he was getting pressure. His, you know, his rush lane integrity was better than what you usually see for rookies, especially with all the fire zones and blitzes. He was being able to maintain his lane integrity while getting pressure, which not everyone can do. Some guys just rush their lane because they figured the blitzer's gonna be the guy to get pressure. He was good on stunts. He was being able to win the one-on-ones. He had some effort to the football, maybe not the best. I want to see something better. The only thing I would say, though, is he got to play fresh a lot, 15 snaps. So you're getting in there with fresh legs against tired legs, and I want to test Hargrave this next game and give him 35 snaps and really see what he can do.
And the thing is, assuming he gets used the way we think he might get used this year, you know, 13, 14, 15 snaps would be probably a tad high for him. But, I mean, to know what you have coming in fresh like that, and you knew when he was on the field.
Oh, yeah. It was as good as performance as anybody had in that game for Pittsburgh.
Another guy, a newcomer, a guy that we hope can help relieve Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt on occasion, Ricardo Matthews, I thought, for the most part, had a good showing in this game, especially working with Hargrave.
Yeah, they look like a great tandem that you can bring in, you know, one or both at a time to spell Hayward into it. And I will say, I went back and watched the pressure that he had on the Duran Grant interception. The left guard there, Joe Dahl, he's a rookie, and he had no idea what was going on that play.
Sure, free run.
Yeah, so I thought it was a little less impressive than what I thought I saw originally, but still Matthews got penetration. He was holding the point of attack. He's an active, aggressive guy. He's able to flow against zone schemes, and, you know, I tweeted it out, Dave. I've been saying it all camp. You know, the defensive line depth's going to do a whole 180 this year, and it's going to be a strength of this team, not a weakness, and that has me as happy as anything coming out of this game.
LT Walton had a couple of good snaps in there as well, too. One of those at right defensive end. Saw him come off with nice leverage. Saw him engage with those hands. Keep a nice angle and base to him, disengage quickly, and made the tackle.
Agree across the board. And I said in that video after the game, my initial reaction was I thought he was a little quiet, but whenever he actually went through and studied his snaps, I was impressed. It's hopefully that back tightness, whatever he has, isn't going to be a major factor. But yeah, I thought he was explosive. I thought he played with tight hands. I thought he played with power and good leverage. And I thought, you know, it wasn't a splashy game, but I thought he did everything right against the run. So, you know, I thought it was a good step for LT Walton.
Before the game, we talked about with a guy like Daniel McCullers, it'd be nice to see Daniel McCullers have to play through snaps, long drives, a lot of plays in succession, mm-hmm. And play a lot of snaps overall just to see how he is from a conditioning standpoint and all. 39 total snaps. I mean, there was some positives in there.
You could tell Big Dan was wearing down, and the caveat to that is, again, I think they wanted to see, just get an idea where he's at conditioning, because he was playing a lot of nickel snaps, and he's not going to play much or any nickel in the regular season. So, you know, he's going to get to play fresh when the games count, and so you're going to see a better version of Daniel McCullers. But, you know, I wrote about this several weeks ago, kind of that one step to take series I was doing, Dave, about, you know, you have to see how this guy can do on that eighth and ninth play of a drive. You have never seen it before, and, you know, being a nose tackle, you're not going to get a ton of those chances, but you never know. And you know, McClendon had stretches where he was playing 8 snaps last year, and so McCullers has to show that. He just didn't do it last year. He didn't do it his rookie year. So I thought it was important just to see where he was at and see how he would react and handle himself, you know, deep into games and deep into drives. It wasn't the best, and that's kind of kind of expected for a big guy like that, but I thought it was just a good way to stress him and test him. It was like Daniel McCullough's boot camp, and you just wanted to put him through the ringer for a game just to see how he would handle it mentally and physically.
Hayward into it with a couple of nice pushes at times in the 13 snaps that those two played. Any of those back-end guys do anything much that stuck out to you on tape? I know really it was kind of uneventful for me.
I thought Keshad Lyons had a good game. You know, in some of those one-on-one situations as a pass rusher, you saw the quick kind of active violent hands that he has, and I thought he was kind of an active presence. Johnny Maxey, you know, I didn't think he had a great game, but he's built well. He's got a lot of length. I like his size. He was playing with some effort and a little bit of athleticism. You know, everywhere else, not really LeVon Hooks. I don't think he did much. Newberry barely played. He didn't register anything for me. But I thought Keshad Lyons is trying to keep at least that battle a little bit alive with LT Walton for that last defensive lineman spot.
Sigler had 4 snaps. Newberry had 5 snaps. Hooks had 9 snaps. Maxey had 11 snaps. And who was the other one? I think that's got him there. Outside linebackers, everybody's up in the roar because Anthony Ciccolo didn't have 7 sacks in the game.
Yeah, I thought he had one near pressure, though. He has that nice kind of one-arm stab where he got under the right tackle and got some pressure and pushed him back. You know, it's tough to win as an outside linebacker. You're not going to do it all the time. And when you're not game planning for stuff and, you know, you don't always know what's coming, you know, it might be a little bit tougher out there. Yeah, it wasn't his best game ever. He bowed out with an ankle injury. When the players came out today for the 2 seconds that they were out there, Ciccolo was not dressed. So, you know, he's still dealing with something. Hopefully it's not too serious. It didn't look like it from my 30,000 soggy view. But, Ciccolo, I think, you know, let's let the rest of the preseason play out.
I thought Arthur Motes had a few decent snaps while in there. James Harrison introduced Taylor Decker to his rip. that's so pretty when James sets people up for that, can get that arm under, and you're helpless then. I mean, he's gonna turn you like a turnstile, and that's exactly what he did. He of course had the sack strip after that as well. Let's see who else. Zumwalt had quite a few snaps on the outside. Mike Riley had some snaps on the outside. We already talked about Motes. Talk about overall what you saw out of the position.
Yeah, they got to play a lot because there wasn't a whole lot of guys left. They were coming in pretty thin on the numbers at outside linebacker, and obviously James Harrison wasn't going to play that much. And, you know, once Motes got his snaps, he kind of bowed out. And then Ciccolo got hurt, so that whole second half was basically Zumwalt and Riley. But they're clones of each other. It's like 2 Jordan Zumwalts out there. And I thought Riley had a better camp, but they both looked the same in game. They were getting run up the arc. They didn't have any counters. You know, the run game presence wasn't much. I think they were both active, and I thought Riley might have been a touch better against the run. There's one play at least that sticks out to me of him working off a block, but they, you know, those guys are just they're getting the snaps and the reps, and that's good, but they didn't do a whole lot with them.
Arthur Motes had 40 snaps in that game. Zumwalt had 44 snaps in that game, and Riley played 33 snaps in that game.
Yeah, there's no one there. There was no Jarvis, no Dupree. Harrison's only going to play for a quarter or not even. So, I'm sure Motes only played those snaps because he had to, and he had to.
The inside game, I could do without having to see Vince Williams run with a wide receiver, right?
I could do without Vince Williams in the late third quarter. What the heck, Dave? What do you think? Why is Vince Williams playing in the late stages of the third quarter?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't have the answer for that. And then
is there a tinfoil hat on there at all? As people have been saying, I know you. I'm sure you got comments about it. You have the tinfoil hat?
I don't
hat
have. I left it. I can't find it right now. here's the thing. He played after he got that stinger too, didn't he? Or did he?
Yeah, he did. I remember that he went down and then he came back and was fine. Vince Williams would probably play through a broken leg, though. But, it was a little strange to me to see him play that late.
Typical book on Vince Williams, right? Downhill, best asset, occasionally sidelined. I mean, he can give you some sideline to sideline stuff. I mean, I'm not disappointed or knocking his play, but he was clearly beat by the receiver on that one over the middle that ended up being dropped that the receiver should have hung on to. Let's see who else in the middle there. I thought LJ Fort had some decent time in there.
That's the guy I was going to go to. Yeah, he was all over the place against the run. He was filling his lane well. He was making plays in the backfield. He gave you a lot of good special teams reps as well. He's running second team like he was for most of the camp with Vince Williams. So, you know, for trying to make a case, Steven Johnson might have been a little bit quieter, but he got a lot of special teams burn as well. Tyler Medakevich, you know, he didn't get to play a ton, I think. I don't know, what was it, 17 snaps or something like that in the fourth quarter. So, you know, the sample size is pretty small to evaluate him. And yeah, I just thought he would play more. I would have taken Vince Williams out midway through the third quarter and get Medakevich in the rest of the way.
I agree. I think hopefully we're going to see some more of Medakevich in this second game here moving forward here. I didn't get a chance to really focus in on Steven Johnson's 18 snaps too much. He did get a lot of burn on special teams, as you would expect. That was his calling card in Tennessee. So it'd be interesting to watch that, you know, that battle for those for that back end one or two spots there moving forward here. Let's see, cornerbacks. Duran Grant is not afraid to tackle.
And that's what you have to be in Pittsburgh. And he had a really good day. And it wasn't even the interception, because that was a fluky thing. It was one of the worst throws that you're going to see in football. Dan Orlovsky, I don't know what he was thinking on that play. But yeah, he was a physical guy. His technique was good. He was getting guys down, you know, without any yak. And, you know, he was coming downhill and playing aggressive. So that's all that you want. And so, yeah, after a guy that, you know, I know had a kind of a quiet camp, I wasn't as down on him as some people were. I thought he was doing some good things and improving. And maybe the fact that he wasn't being thrown at is a good sign. But, yeah, that's a good game and a, you know, situation where Artie Burns is out. You take advantage of the opportunity. And I thought Duran Grant definitely did that.
You know, the calling card coming out of Ohio State was that he's not afraid to tackle. So, you know, it's good to see that. And let's see, open field, I thought he did. You know, there's a talk still about he might move to safety, and we'll have to see. He's not even sure. He says, yes, there's been talk about it after the game. But we'll have to see if that ends up happening. It would be nice if you could kind of cross-train a guy like that right at this stage right now, especially with the way Goltzen going down. And who knows how many DBs, you know, if you could carry a guy that kind of knows what he's doing. But having not played safety yet, you would think that, to me, this late in training camp is kind of a weird time to undergo such a transition.
Yeah, I don't totally understand all this back and forth with Duran Grant. If you want to move him, that's fine. Just move the guy. Don't talk about it. Can you imagine if you're Duran Grant and you're not really sure where you're going to, you know, play the next morning? If you want to move him, move him. Or if you want to keep him a corner, keep him a corner. Don't do this back and forth and kind of leave him floating and up in the air with kind of looking over his shoulder like, am I going to be playing somewhere else? You know, pick a spot. That's all I care
about.
And
really, in my opinion, they should be doing that with Sean Davis right now too.
Yeah, that's just it's just tougher because it was a matter of circumstance. You know, the goal was not for him to play in the slot this immediate, and that is a good point though. I think people have to understand that. Yeah, he may not have had the greatest game, but whenever you're a guy, a rookie no less, being moved around and you're only getting half the snaps as any regular slot corner would, and half the snaps of any regular safety, it's tough to get better when you're kind of getting, you know, pushed around so much and floated in and out. So I think there's an element there that people have to understand and sympathize
not
with.
Not a great first showing for Sean Davis, especially not early. He even talked after the game that he kind of underestimated how big and physical Anquan Boldin is, who turned him, spun him around in the circle early in the game, and then Sean Davis missed a tackle. Tackling kind of lax there in the early portion of the game, of course, had the horse collar penalty on him as well, too. He seemed to settle down a little bit later on in the game. I thought he admitted after the game how nervous, you know, how kind of overwhelming it was for him for his first NFL game too. So, you know, let's not throw this baby out with the bathwater just because of, you know, getting spun around by a guy like Anquan Boldin and missing a few tackles in the game. Was it a stellar showing? Absolutely not. But he's going through a tough transition period. He admitted how tough it is for him right now, having to kind of learn two positions, and he did play safety in this game Friday night against the Lions as well too. So I'm more apt to give him an incomplete on this game.
Yeah, and I think it just speaks to his IQ and conditioning, the fact that they're trying to play him at both spots, because it's something that that you just don't do with a typical Steelers rookie. So, I commend him for that. And you're right, he's a nervous rookie. It's game one. We've seen a lot of guys game one struggle before. Martavis Bryant has in the past. Let's let him settle down a little bit and kind of get a chance to breathe and feel comfortable, because it is a very difficult spot that he's in. So, yeah, like you said, Dave, agree with you across the board. Not a great game, but it was just a game.
Boy, Robert Gordon and Ross Cockrell played well into that game. 51 snaps for Gordon and 50 for Cockrell. Now, those were two I was hollering to get out of the game.
Yeah, I mean, Cockrell I can see a little bit because, he's a second-year guy in the Steelers system and he needs the snaps to get better and to take what he's learned now that he's had the chance to sit down and breathe and really understand this defense. But Gordon, I don't know if it's because Sean Davis was getting those snaps to slot and they didn't want to put in somebody else because, Shark was already out there and they didn't want to put in a Dangerfield, because Ventrone got hurt. I don't know. Yeah, Gordon does need to play 50 snaps. But if I had to guess, I'm assuming the fact that Davis was in the slot and the Ventrone injury played a role in all the reps that Robert Gordon got.
Need to put Shamarco Thomas on weight gain 3,000 and make him a linebacker.
Someone had said that he's probably a better linebacker, kind of in that Deion Buchanan, kind of Mark Barron type role. But that's what I said, it's looking for a dime defender if they want to go that route. Shamarco Thomas definitely has some attractive traits to that, and he had a good game. He did a nice job in coverage. He was flying around, but there was still that one play, that missed tackle that he had. He's not coming to balance. He's biting on that little juke move, I think it was, that Zach Zenner gave him, and Duran Grant's on his outside. There's no reason for Shark to bite. He's got his outside help, stay inside and being able to close down any lanes for the running back to go. So that was just one of those plays where, like, what is going through your head, Shamarco Thomas? And we know the biggest issue with Shamarco Thomas has always been above the neck
and out in space, man. Just cannot break down, it doesn't seem. He can fill in the box,
and
that's never been an issue in my eyes. In fact, we're talking about this every preseason. Boy, you see that play Shamarco Thomas made in the box, but that's all we're talking about now. However, everybody wanted to put that touchdown on him. I knew as soon as it happened it wasn't on him. I didn't know exactly who it was on until I was able to go back through the tape and then read some media reports, but it wasn't on him. Now, it might have been on him to the fact that they did not communicate the call properly or make sure that Duran Grant was in the right defense. Duran Grant blitzed off of the right side of the defense, was evidently not supposed to. Just count the numbers up. I think there was six coming on that play.
Seven
coming on that play, and it should have been six. And that left the guy that was supposed to be probably cover one, man across. And in fact, here's the thing I didn't like about Shamarco. Okay, yeah, it was the wrong defense. Don't worry about pointing out that it's the wrong defense in the middle of the play.
Right, yeah, you could see he was pointing back, and he kind of, trotted at the end of that play, and, that play was, almost stopped. I think it was Gordon that nearly had to stop. There was miscommunication. It was not on Shamarco Thomas. I think Duran Grant basically said it was his fault. He shouldn't have blitzed on that play. But, yeah, just make sure, you worry about those things after the whistle and not mid-play.
There's no guarantee he gets there to help with that tackle, but maybe, just maybe, that he comes flying in and – who knows? You stop.
Yeah, fumble
stop
him or
at the
something.
One. You knock the ball loose. You live to defend the blade of grass another day.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So yeah, that play and that missed tackle that he had. I understand tackling in space is difficult. If the running back has a two-way go, safety, you're in a difficult spot. I totally get that. But in that situation, you have the outside taken away because Duran Grant's there. Don't bite on the juke. Why are you coming down that hard? Stay inside and be able to wall things off, and you can make that tackle without allowing all that extra yardage. That was a play where you're just like, what is happening? What is going through your mind? You had everything shut down, and you did the absolute last thing that you needed to do to stop that play.
Robert Gordon, I thought, had a nice game, especially coming up with some fills as well too.
Can he get some respect, Dave? I mean, not from you, but just Steelers Nation. Can we talk about how good of a player Robert Gordon is? He does not get the respect
that
he does.
He got a shiny new toy sitting there.
I guess that's a good, yeah. He's the old junker, but
yeah,
I love
him. I mean,
him.
He's going to start. It would be surprising him and Mitchell are not starting in that secondary. I mean, look, it's his turn to show he belongs as a starter. And he at the end of last year, I thought he played well after taking over for Will Allen there. So I mean, there was nothing in that first game that made me turn my nose up at him. I'll tell you that. Now, one guy I didn't get a chance to watch extensively because of watching other things, Montel Garner, 20 snaps in the game. Were you able to focus in on him any?
I mean, I tried to. I just don't think he was targeted that often. He wasn't around in the run too much. I just don't think he got the opportunity. So it wasn't a bad game, but I just thought the sample size was too small. He wasn't involved in enough plays to really find that out. I think he got work in the slot and outside corner a little bit. But yeah, the sample size is just too small to stick out.
Let's see. Who else are we missing here that got some work in the secondary? Hagan. There's no really that was some missed tackling there, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it was not a good angle.
You know what? I thought Jordan Dangerfield had some decent snaps in that game, especially in the box.
Isn't that the same as Shamarcus Thomas? He's going to play in the box fine. It's about everything
right,
else.
Right, right.
You know?
But, I mean, there was one where he just shocked that tight end and then chased down the line on the backside and almost – made a tackle. Of course, almost making the tackle means you didn't make the tackle from behind. But that play, in my opinion, stuck out with Jordan Dangerfield.
Yeah, no, Dangerfield will definitely have those plays, and he's going to be a special teams presence. And I saw a certain somebody included him on their 53-man roster today. Are you confident in that, or are you just doing that because you're not really sure who else to put there?
I don't know who else to put in there right now. I knew Ventrone ended up being put on injured reserve today. I didn't know that was coming, but I had an idea that Ventrone was going to be sidelined for a few days. So, I mean, when you're talking about a potential fifth safety that can play on special teams, in my opinion, he's the obvious choice.
Right, right. He wasn't waived injured, right, Ventrone? He was just normal. He's going straight to
IR.
Right,
he's vested. So.
Okay, I was going to say, yeah, he has to be vested.
Yeah,
he's gotcha.
Vested. For those listening that don't understand, if you're not vested, meaning you don't have 4 years, you're subject to waivers to get to IR until after the third preseason game. So that's the situation the Steelers are facing right now with Cinquez Golson, on top of the fact that if they moved Golson to the IR prior to the, you know, after the final cutdown, well, then he's no longer eligible to be a designated return player. So it'll be interesting to watch what happens with Golson after that third preseason game. My speculation is they'll hold him all through training camp and potentially, you know, depending on how many injuries they have, of course, hold him on that initial 53-man roster, and then the day after of that final cuts, then you throw him on IR.
Last note for defensive backs from this game. One guy who didn't play at all, Donald Washington, and he was a guy I kind of talked up before camp, but I've really soured on as we've gone along, and no snaps on defense, only a couple, you know, 3 to 5 on special teams. I mean, everyone else got snaps, whether that's Shabazz or Garner or, you know, at the safety spots, Vinipal and Hagan and all them. A goose egg for Donald Washington, and that, of course, is a very bad sign.
Let me ask you, we talk about Dangerfield there. Who do you have? Let's go ahead and list Sean Davis as a safety, okay? But knowing that or thinking that he's going to start the season as the nickel corner. How many you gotta have five total, right? You would think you don't have to do anything,
because there's not a six corners that's gonna, you know, there's not a six corner that you really want to keep, so probably five and
all
five.
Right, so who, I mean, Ventrone's not that option right now.
Well, yeah, of the in-house guys, there's really no one else to pick. You're not going to pick Vinipal. You're not going to pick Jacob Hagan. But you know, I'm gonna cop out here a little bit and say that they're gonna go. that they're going to go waiver wire and pick somebody off, then it just makes too much sense right now. It's their history. It's what they do each of the last four seasons. They've added a defensive back at the end of a cutdown. So I think, you know, given the state, the lack of depth that there is right now, it makes too much sense to not pick up another guy off the
street.
So off
you're
the street.
Going player to be named later.
Yeah, that old TBA.
I could have taken that route, but I threw him in there today. So
I mean,
I don't disagree
don't
with what you're saying. I mean, it very well likely could be that route, you know. So in my
Dangerfield did get first team punt coverage snaps, so make into that what you will.
And here's the thing: it's not like even if they were going to keep Ventrone, it's because he could play safety.
Right. And Dangerfield, I think, would be a good special teams player. He plays with that tenacity and that hair on fire like Tomlin, you know, would talk about. So, I mean, it would make sense. It's just they want someone else out there that's going to have more potential, like what Ross Cockrell ended
up
showing.
Anything else stick out to you secondary-wise?
Nope, I think not secondary. I thought in the totality, what did you think about Keith Butler? He was
Holy
playing like this was a
moly.
Super Bowl.
Sending the sink, sending DBs.
The stove.
Numbers. I can't wait till you're done charting to let us know how many times he blitzed in there.
Yeah, it was a lot. I mean, that's I know they repped some of that in training camp. They had a couple of sessions, you know, that were dedicated to fire zones, but I don't know. That's a lot to put on some of these young guys' plates, you know, game one. So I'm not sure what the idea was there, but tone it back a little bit. And he's doing some of these stunts. I want to see these guys just win one-on-one. I mean, yeah, if a guy wins on a stunt, that's great for the team, but I want to see how you win, you know, in that old O-line, D-line, you know, kind of drill, not because you got free on a stunt or you got free on a blitz. So I want to, you know, I mean, that's great and all, and who am I to disagree with Keith Butler, but I want to just see some straight-up rushes just to see how guys are able to win in a vacuum instead of, you know, creating their lanes.
Here's
for
what
him.
Mike Prisuta tweeted after Sunday's practice. Quarterbacks blitz versus Detroit, but defensive coordinator Keith Butler keeps stressing need to pressure with four-man rush. Well, like, how about let's see if we can pressure with four-man rush a little bit more during the preseason there, Keith. Yeah. As far as I know, we don't get trophies for these things, so...
Yeah, is that just in his DNA that he just can't go a game without blitzing? But yeah, that was one of the more, you know, curious things coming out of this game.
Yeah, seeing Cockrell come, seeing Duran Grant come when he wasn't even supposed to.
Yeah, they had one where they blitzed both corners. They blitzed the outside left cornerback and they blitzed the slot, which they've shown in camp before. So I mean, he was just doing everything. I don't know if he had a bet. He was betting on this game or something or what. But he wanted to win.
Shout out to Jordan Berry, right?
Yeah, he had again. It's what he did in training camp. He had some great punts to hang time, the placement, checked all those boxes. While Will Monday, he had that one. He had one nice punt at the end of the game. But there was that one real low liner that, you know, I think the line set up around the Steelers' 40-yard line, and that's the old JV punt, Tom.
Right out
say.
Of his own end zone, I bet he was shaking like a leaf.
Yeah, and, that was a tough spot to be in, but yeah, Barry definitely won the day.
I'd be interested to see if Tomlin shakes that rotation up against the Eagles just to put the Watuzi on Monday and get him in there earlier in the game. But for all practical purposes, I don't see how Barry loses this now moving forward. All right. Tackling needs improvement. Offense needs to hold on to the football. Need to quit dropping. Need to make plays on third down. Anything else kind of stick out overall in that game?
I think that's most of it. Basically, everything that Tomlin said this team had to do, they failed to do in Friday's game. So, yeah, a lot of work to do. Today was not the best opportunity to do that. They were in a gymnasium. I know Tomlin said about the above, the neck kind of stuff to work on, which is definitely valuable, the chance to go over the tape today. But hopefully the weather clears and they're able to get out on the field tomorrow to really put that stuff into action.
You'll be there watching that with a front row seat, hopefully, as well, too. Hopefully the rain will hold off for you. I'd like to thank our sponsor. Main sponsor, right?
Yes, touringplans.com. I'm not sure what the dinner is for myself tonight. Maybe some leftover pizza that I have. But I promise you, Touring Plans is a lot better than leftover pizza. If you want to take your next Disney trip, definitely look to them for your booking
and
needs.
And the several people that helped donate to the cause, definitely, as well, too. We'll be running down. We're running out of these special edition podcasts, but we hope to run through those names in its entirety here in the next several special edition podcasts as well, too. Alex, I appreciate everything. I hope you nothing. I wish you hope for you nothing but sunshine on Monday, and I think our listeners and readers do as well too. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow Alex Cazora on Twitter at Alex_Cazora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Follow my other co-host David Todd at David M Todd. Monday's show is up in the air, and especially being as how Alex and I just recapped all the game right now, there will be a podcast Monday night. However, regardless what does or doesn't happen Monday during the day. If you want to donate to the show, go to SteelersDepot.com and look for the donate button in the black navigational bar. Thank you everybody that has listened throughout this thing and donated already. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, and tonight Alex Kozora.